I'm Stephen M. Hall, MD, an integral physician.
And I'm Grace Porter, a licensed psychotherapist. And together, we're the 7 Tools, a company focused on your personal growth and transformation.
And you are here with us for the Change for Good Summit. This year, we're focusing on building resilience in anxious times.
This summit is full of deep conversation and practical advice. We hope you enjoy this interview.
So now let's dive in. This is Dr. Hall with the 2019 Change for Good Summit. This year, we're focusing on building resilience in anxious times. I'm really excited to introduce our next speaker. She's someone I know fairly well, and so I can personally vouch that she is an expert in her topic, which is how to be healthy with your feelings and how that helps with anxiety. So Grace Porter is a psychotherapist in private practice and is licensed as a counselor in Maryland and Washington State. She's also the co-founder of the 7 Tools and my second daughter. So with over a decade of clinical experience, Grace utilizes holistic approach to healing and believes in integrating mind, body, and spirit in order to help clients consciously reconnect in their soul's pursuit. So she brings the 7 Tools of Healing to her work with clients, the classes she teaches to students, and as well as practicing them in her own life. So Grace, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got interested in psychotherapy?
Yeah, I can. I came into psychotherapy actually through international relations, which seems like a little bit of a jump, but I was looking to be an international mediator and was feeling a little bit overwhelmed by the woes of the world. And I actually took the Taming the Bear class that you teach and that we now teach together. And I, through that process, got a little bit better at listening to myself and figuring out what was really driving me towards that work and what was not working for that work. And therapy ended up feeling like a place where the parts of me that were wanting to do that work were going to be happy, and the parts of me that were overwhelmed by the international mediation type work wouldn't be overwhelmed anymore. So it was a better fit for more of myself. And so I went to Pacifica Graduate Institute, which is a depth psychology program down in Carpinteria, California, outside of Santa Barbara. And so that really grounded me, and it's a psychoanalytic type education. So I practice that in my office, do a lot of work with image and archetypal energies, and really getting into the core assumptions, or, you know, in the 7 Tools lingo, we call it our beliefs. And we're really creating the change at the deeper level as opposed to focusing on behavior. So so the 7 Tools are actually a really nice complement to my education, my formal education from Pacifica, because the work is really the same, but it creates a really usable vocabulary for talking about ideas that are otherwise kind of nebulous. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, if I remember correctly, you took the Taming the Bear right when you were out of college.
I did, yep. I think I took it in 2007.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. So, well, today we want to explore the ideas that there are healthy ways to experience and work with your feelings, and there are unhealthy ways to work with them. And then we want to focus on the feeling of anxiety. So, Grace, so what are feelings, and how can we be with ours in healthy ways?
Yeah, so the word feeling is actually kind of awesome. I have a therapist friend who likes to talk about it, and I think she probably got it from somewhere, because this is, you know, the way that information passes from one person to another, but about how the word feeling both applies to a physical feeling and also to an emotional feeling. And when we're talking about feelings, it really is both. So anything that we're experiencing in our bodies as well as in our psyches, or in our minds and our emotional sphere. So when we're having a feeling, there's going to be a physical component. You might be, if you're feeling anxious, say, like, you might have butterflies in your stomach, you might have tense shoulders, your thighs might be clenched, you might be kind of furrowing your brow, there might be kind of a wide array of different physical feelings that you might be having. And then you might also be feeling that antsy, amped up, nervous, worried, really focused on a particular thing, or any of the kind of internal psyche-related aspects of the feeling. So it's, when we're talking about feelings, we're talking about both the kind of the physical feeling and the emotional component. And how to be healthy with them is a big question. So bear with me as I kind of dive into this, because it's a complicated answer.
Oh, but it's critically important too. Yeah.
Critically important. Yeah. So the first bit is just to feel them, right? If you have a feeling, feel the feeling. Mm. I think we do a lot of things to not feel our feelings for a variety of reasons. Sometimes we're just kind of habituated to not feel our feelings. Sometimes we've been trained to not feel our feelings. Sometimes parts of ourselves feel so threatened by the feeling that they work really hard to make sure that we don't feel it. But we might be repressing the feelings or denying the feelings. Sometimes we'll minimize our feeling. Sometimes we'll try to feel something else instead. But so there's a lot of different ways that we can not feel our feelings. But the reality is that feelings are messengers. They're just bringing us information. They're not the bad guy. Even when they're really uncomfortable, they're never the problem. Because the way that our psyche works, we will experience something in the world. There'll be some sort of what we call a sensory input. Right? You see something or you smell something. And that sensory input passes through what we call the structure of interpretation, or the sum total of all of the beliefs that we hold. And what comes out the other side of that is our feeling. So we smell a rose. That sensory input of smelling the rose passes through all of our beliefs. And then we have a feeling, and it might be like a comforting feeling because maybe it reminds us of our grandma, or it might be a really uncomfortable feeling because it reminds us of our grandma. And that's going to change depending on who you are and the beliefs that you hold. And what the feeling that comes out the other side might be multiple things, right? You might feel sad, and you might also feel comforted, and you might feel worried, and you might feel all kinds of things because it's passed through all of your beliefs, not just one belief. So the feelings that you have might be really varied. So allowing yourself to feel whatever it is that you feel, and to really practice being aware of what those feelings are, and allowing space for all of them, even when they seem kind of contradictory. Because I think one of the things that I see in our students a lot, and in my clients a lot, and you know, I'm human, so I experience this in myself as well, and that we'll often kind of glom onto one feeling that we have, and we'll not allow space for the other feelings, especially when they feel contradictory or one of them feels more comfortable than another. But we really have to be, if we're going to be healthy with our feelings, we have to be making space for the complexity of our emotional reactions to things. Because when we're not paying attention to all of them, or when we don't make space for all of it, so say we allow ourselves to feel that comforted feeling, but we push down the grief, right? Like we allow ourselves to feel what feels comfortable and we don't allow ourselves the discomfort. That discomfort doesn't go away. It just starts kind of working in the background and gets built into like our unconscious. And that still impacts us. It's still going to change the way that we feel about things. It's still going to change what we do, but we're not going to be consciously aware of it. So we're not able to work with it, because until we become aware of something, we can't really create change with it. So practicing that awareness.
And that feeling state that we have can be really messy. And it doesn't have to follow any recipe or any formula, right? It just is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes like our brains jump in and we're like, oh, well, we shouldn't feel that way. Like there's nothing to be worried about here. I shouldn't be feeling concerned about this. But the reality is that we do. And there's some part of us that has a valid reason for feeling that way, even if that part of us is a little bit not grounded in current reality. Mm. Right. So like sometimes we might have a belief that was formed at a time when our life was really different than it is now. And we see this a lot with, I'm going to say with adults who had difficult childhoods, but we all do this. I want to be really clear about this, that you could have had the picture perfect childhood and you're still going to have some limiting beliefs that were formed during that time, because we have really different capabilities and resources when we're an adult than we do when we're a child. And so we depend on people in a different way when we're children than when we're adults. And so we will often kind of form these beliefs about ourselves that might be rooted in that reality, but aren't necessarily rooted in this reality. But so that belief will kind of pop out that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And depth psychology has this great phrase that I really love. That's they call it the tension of the opposites. I think that Jung wrote about it that way, but I'm kind of bad at remembering that. So I could be misquoting the origins of that, but it's kind of this idea that when there are things inside of ourselves that are really different, there then kind of becomes this third force, like that tension between the opposites, like where we're really comforted and we're really sad. We're really anxious and we also feel really safe. Like, how do you be anxious and safe at the same time, but yet you are, or you can be, right? And so that tension that you feel between those things that feel so different, then it almost becomes like a third thing that you're dealing with, right? That tension is then present in the moment also.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And to make space for that too and explore that, right?
Yeah, because our brains want things to be really simple. Like, we want to be able to say like, oh, you know, I just hate that person. But the reality is that we probably feel other things towards that person also.
Oh, that's interesting, because I've been spending a lot of time recently thinking about either or thinking versus and thinking. And whenever I catch myself in the either or thinking, I'll stop and say, well, is there a way to put them together? Is there an and? And that's kind of what you're saying we can do.
Pretty much always an and, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That you feel this and that and that and that. Yeah. And I think one of the other things that happens when we start only accepting one part of the situation is that it's easier for us to over-identify with that part, right? Like, maybe you feel anxious a lot. And so you kind of say, well, I'm an anxious person. Like, that anxiety is me. I am that anxiety.
Yeah.
Like that. And, you know, or I'm so sad. That sadness is me. Whether or not you're thinking about it consciously that way, because oftentimes I think we aren't necessarily saying like, I am sadness, the sadness is me, but we start kind of believing that, or we become so like overly attached to that emotion or that feeling that it makes it harder to see the other things that are also present. But it's also really limiting, because in this moment, maybe you are feeling anxious, but you are not anxiety. And so when you start to say like, I am anxiety, it starts creating less space for the rest of you, or less permission for you to be feeling something else in another moment.
Mm. So then you can get trapped in that loop. So that's that idea about not over-identifying with your feeling. Then your feeling is just a subset of who you are, so to speak, or it's just something that you're
experiencing
right then, and then going to be different sometime down the road, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In my yoga nidra training, Kamini Desai, she's got an interview with her this time actually too, so you can hear her talk about this directly, but she talks about it as though like we are the vast spacious sky of awareness. Like we are the sky, and our feelings and our emotions are the clouds that come through the sky. And that sometimes like we'll hop on the cloud and we'll be like, this is my cloud and I am this cloud. And so we have to like practice getting off of that cloud and like recognizing that cloud is passing through us, but we are not that cloud.
Mm. That's an interesting metaphor. Yeah. I often use the metaphor of the river, where you're sitting on the bank watching the river flow by. And sometimes you jump off into the river and you're floating along with the river and you're also all wet. So
yeah. Yeah. It's kind of the same idea.
Metaphor. So you also talk a lot about feelings as messengers, that they're actually trying to tell us something. Can you?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is something that we talk about in the Seven Tools stuff. It's also something that exists outside of that. James Hillman talks about symptoms as messengers, and it's kind of the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that it's really that the feeling is information. And because of that relationship between beliefs and feelings that I was talking about before, we can use what we know, which is our feeling, and we can use what we know, which is also our sensory input. And we can harken back to our algebra days and solve for X to figure out what the belief is. So like, I know I smelled the rose and I know that I feel sad, what happened in that moment of smelling the rose where I feel sad and I go, oh, right, like I have the belief that I miss my grandmother, right?
Yeah.
That she's gone and that I don't have that connection to her anymore, whatever it is, right? So, and I'm using this kind of silly rose example, but this works for really more complex situations as well. So when we're having a feeling, we can ask it to take us to its roots, and that will oftentimes, even just asking that kind of a question to the belief or to the feeling, will take us to the belief. We might have a memory, or we might have the words of the belief, like I'm not enough, or the world is not safe, or everybody leaves me, or whatever the belief is. And sometimes it's a memory, and then we want to look at what the conclusions that we drew from that memory are. Like, what was it that I walked away from that experience thinking about myself or about the world? Because that's often the belief, or at least tied to the belief enough that if we can hold that for long enough, the belief emerges. So it is kind of this, like, if we're going to be healthy with our feelings, we have to be open enough to feel them. We have to create enough space in our life to feel the wide variety of things that we feel. And we have to be willing to get curious about them so that we're able to understand where they come from. Because when we are able to understand where they come from, then that's when we're able to make different choices. And those different choices are often what allows us to feel better, because we're creating different circumstances for ourselves in our lives. So when we're not doing that exploration process, we kind of parts of our life kind of are on repeat in the background. And so we experience similar circumstances. That's really our psyche's attempt to let us see something so that we're able to heal it, because we can't change something that we don't see.
Yeah. So what do you see shift in people as they start to become healthier with their feelings?
Oh, so much. I think that there's a little bit of a myth around being healthy with your feelings. Like, when you're healthy with your feelings, all of a sudden you won't feel bad anymore. and that's not actually true, because you're still human. You're still going to experience the wide array of feelings that we get to experience as humans. But I do think that the better you get at interacting with your feelings, the more manageable the bad feels, and the less drastic it is. I kind of think about, like, if you think about the messenger, like the feelings being the messenger, right? Kind of equate it to a toddler trying to get your attention, right? It's going to say, "Mom." And if you listen, then that's the end of it. But if you don't listen, it's going to say, "Mom, mom, mom, mom," and start yelling louder and louder and louder, start tugging on you, right? So when we are healthy with our feelings, we're getting the message sooner. Mm. So the toddler doesn't have to be screaming and throwing a temper tantrum to get our attention, because we're listening earlier.
Right? Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So And one of the things that I've seen over and over with clients is that they'll be living a life where there's really big highs and really big lows, and everything feels just really intense, that their feelings are so intense. And then they get healthier with their feelings, and all of a sudden it's like the
amplitude.
Yeah, it's a smaller distance between the two. And so there's often kind of this like little letdown of like, what's going on? I'm bored. Like, where's the drama? And they have to get a little bit better at listening to their feelings, because their feelings are still there. They'll like kind of like start feeling a little numb or disconnected at that point, because they're like I was listening, and then I was feeling all these feelings, and now like I just like everything just is fine, and it's just this like bland. But then when they like listen more closely, the ups and downs are still there. The information is still there. They're still able to learn more about themselves. But the messages are just quieter, which allows them a lot more space to then start engaging in other things, because their energy is not going into managing the intensity of their emotions so much. And they're able to put that energy into other pursuits in their lives. And so I see them having more energy to dedicate themselves to like passions in their lives, and they're able to be in healthier relationships often, friendships, family relationships, partnerships. sometimes they change, to be fair. Like, I think when we start getting healthier, sometimes the people around us are not able to engage with us in that healthy way. And so we will sometimes exit relationships when we're doing this work. And I think that the relationships that come in kind of in that space are more fulfilling. There's more, usually more healthy patterns in the relationship itself, or more kind of give and take, more of a back and forth flow of energy, as opposed to like a relationship kind of feeding one person's limiting beliefs or the other.
So the new relationship that's taken the place of the old one, that's what you're talking about, right? Yeah, the newer relationships.
Yeah, like oftentimes they tend to be healthier relationships. The patterns in the relationships tend to be a little bit better. But I also see people's relationships when they stay in the relationships, that the relationships grow and get healthier. Like when it works to stay in a relationship, the relationships get better.
So if the other person's able to meet
to do their work and grow also.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that really stands out to me about when people do this work is that, you know, the tools, we call it right action, right? Which is that knowing of what you need to say or what you need to do. That becomes a lot more clear for people. They're a lot more able to tap into what action they need to take in their lives to be creating the life that feels satisfying to their soul, right? That they're making choices that are aligned with their higher good more often than not, or more often than they were when they were in older, more unhealthy patterns with their feelings. And I do really want to be clear that it is still painful, right? Like having these emotions still hurts. It's not this
Shangri-La.
Yeah. It's not this like rosy rainbow park with lollipops everywhere, but it feels more manageable. And in those moments when it is difficult, people feel more resourced and more ready to deal with it. It doesn't like completely throw them off anymore. So like the situation is still hard, and they're better equipped to deal with it. And they are probably not experiencing it in quite as intense of a way as they were before.
Sounds to me like you're talking about resilience.
I am talking about resilience.
So a healthy relationship with your feelings is an important skill for developing resilience.
Yeah.
What you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. The other really important thing that happens for people when they get healthier with their feelings is that their reaction to something stops being the source of more agony. So the Buddhists talk about this as like the second arrow. There's the parable of the second arrow, and that's really that there's the occurrence that happens in your life, right? Something happens, and then and that's the first arrow. And then there's the second arrow, which is your reaction to whatever it is that happened. And so often when we're in unhealthy patterns or we're being unhealthy with our feelings, the second arrow can actually be more painful than the first arrow, because it's not so much like the reality of what actually happens in our life that's always so painful. It's like our reaction to it that really digs. And so when we're healthier with our feelings, that second arrow, you know, that second arrow might be shame. It might be, you know, feeling really guilty or beating yourself up about something, or like holding a grudge about something for a really long time. Those second arrows are all really, really painful. Yeah. And so when we're healthier with our feelings, then those second arrows shift and they stop being so painful.
So sometimes our response to, say, the other person relationship will actually create more problems down the road. Is that, and then if we're really healthy with our feelings, we're getting the information that life's really giving to us, right then there's a chance our response might actually help the relationship be healthier or not. That's kind of what you're saying, is that?
That also, yeah. Yeah, I was talking about it more with like within your own self, but it does definitely, there are second arrows that show up in our relationships too, because I think when...
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Say I get a speeding ticket, right? That's the occurrence. Mm-hmm. That's the first arrow. Right. The second arrow is that I feel a lot of shame for being caught doing something bad. Right. I was breaking the rules, and I have the belief that I have to be good at everything all the time and do the right thing in all moments. Sets me up for
a lot of disappointment. Yeah.
A lot of pain. Right. So in response to that belief, I might feel a lot of shame about being caught doing the wrong thing, even though, you know, most of us probably speed at some moment in time, right? And it wasn't like malicious, or there wasn't necessarily like malintent, but I still might feel shame for being caught. And between the two things, that second arrow, that feeling, the shame for being seen doing the wrong thing, is probably going to be, well, I'll just say personally for myself, that will be much more painful for me than actually having to pay a ticket, which is still a pain, right? But my reaction to that circumstance is where the second arrow
creates more suffering for you. Yeah.
Right. Whereas if I come into it with that belief of like, oh, everybody makes mistakes sometimes, I just need to take responsibility for it and move on, then I'm going to pay the ticket and move on.
Yeah, I never really have understood all those people that take speed limit signs literally. So.
Yeah, just put that out there. Hey, police officers, my dad's speed.
Watch for this guy. You can make lots of money. So,
But to your point about in relationships, I think that also really happens because, and I'm trying to think of a good example of this to illustrate this. Okay, so like, and you're in my relationship, say, right? Something happens, like we're going to go to lunch and I show up 30 minutes late, right?
Okay.
You're going to have your own feelings about that and like what that means to you that I showed up so late to our arranged time, right? And it doesn't really necessarily matter what it is that maybe there was really bad traffic, or, you know, maybe my son was having a meltdown when I left and I had to take the time to be with him before I could leave the house, or whatever it is. I could have a very justifiable reason for being late that you would maybe even agree with if you were aware of it, or if you allowed yourself to feel that, right? But say in that moment you were feeling really disrespected, or you were feeling abandoned, or you were feeling like I didn't really care about you, and if I did, I would have shown up on time, mm-hmm. right? These are the kinds of things that we think, like these thoughts pass through our mind, like however attached to those thoughts we get, those thoughts pass through most of our minds when we're in a situation like that. Like, why is she not here yet? We said noon and now it's 12:30 and she's just walking in the door now. Like those little resentment-y feelings, and sometimes they come and go and we don't get attached to them, and that's fine. But sometimes we do get kind of attached to them. And so say you do, and you act from that feeling, mm-hmm. right? Your reaction to that circumstance, you feel abandoned or disrespected. And so you say, well, I only actually have until 12:35. So we're going to have to end, or, you know, I was just on my way out, and you get up and you leave because you're acting on that feeling. That creates like a continued effect of that original circumstance. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I'm going to have my own feelings about it. So it's like, it does kind of create these, like, you know, volleys of arrows back and forth if we're not. But if you were able to say like, oh, you know, I, to yourself or to me even, like, you know, we had said 12 and I'm feeling kind of abandoned and disrespected. And, you know, I was feeling like my time wasn't of value to you, or that you didn't value our time together. My feelings are really hurt. That's going to create a really different response for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm liable to sit down and say, oh, I'm really sorry, Dad. You know, my son was in a rough spot this morning and I just had to take the time to comfort him before I left, or whatever. Right. And then you're going to have a different reaction to that than just feeling like I didn't care.
What? Your son is more important to you than me?
No. That might be the feeling, right? And that might be where you go with it. And these things, so you can see like how things can spiral out of control really quickly when we're not being healthy with our feelings, because you're having these feelings and I'm having these feelings, right? I might be saying, you raised me to be a good parent. I want to show up for the emotional needs of my child because you instilled this value in me that's important. So you're like disregarding that now, right? So
yeah.
You can see that it can go either direction in our relationship. So when we are healthy with our feelings, can stop that volley of second and 17th
arrows. I like that idea of not just the second arrow, it's like this whole volley of arrows. Because that can really happen. You see that all the time in family.
Yeah. And it usually is happening when the people in the families are lacking the skills of, to be healthy with their feelings. So it's not that they're, you know, bad people or that they're unreasonable or that they, you know, it's just that they don't have the skills that they need to show up to themselves in those moments to be healthy with their own feelings. And as parents, when we're not healthy with our feelings, it's really hard to teach our children to be healthy with their feelings. So this gets passed down one way or the other, like the skills or the lack of skills gets passed down in families. And there are other ways to learn it. You know, tons of people who were not taught as children do learn to be healthy with their feelings through their own means or through, you know, therapy or self-help classes or books or whatever. Like the skills are out there to be learned. Did you want to say something?
And then I was going to say, and if you don't even know how you're feeling, then you can't communicate them to the people you're in relationship with. So that's another reason the volley keeps going is, you know, so it's up to you to have the responsibility to know how you're feeling so that you know if you need to express them to the other person or not. Like in the example you gave where I would actually tell you how I was feeling about you showing up late instead of just acting out on it. You know, I wouldn't be able to tell you that if I didn't know myself, right?
Right. Yeah. And there may be times when you want to tell me and there may be times when you don't want to tell me, and either is fine, right? We don't always have to express all of our feelings, but being aware of our feelings, and honestly, like oftentimes expressing our feelings is part of being healthy with our feelings. But there are moments, like maybe that's something that, you know, you wanted to hold for yourself. And I think especially sometimes in, you know, there are different relationships where there's more space and less space for your emotions to show up. Like you maybe don't need to tell your boss that you were feeling a particular way when he did a certain thing or she did a certain thing.
Right.
But there may be times when you do want to.
Yeah, then, but if you know, you have the option. If you don't know, you're liable to just act out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So basically you see a lot of important shifts in people when they start to become healthy with their feelings, right?
Yeah. It's like this, I don't know. It's one of my favorite things about the work I do actually, because I just, it's really part of their coming home to themselves process. And I just see them being so, I don't know, more fulfilled in their relationships and just like the intensity of their life goes down. So everything feels more manageable and they're like just less on the cusp of falling apart.
Yeah. Can you briefly review the 7 tools and just show us how practicing them helps us relate to our feelings in healthier ways?
Yeah. And this is another big question. These long answers you're going to get today. So the 7 tools, the first one is faith. And what we mean by faith is that trust in yourself, that trust in the divine, that trust that the sun is going to come up tomorrow. It's that really grounding foundation of like being able to relax into something and allow, like to feel confident enough to allow there to be enough space to explore your feelings or whatever else. It's like that grounding force that supports us from, we can talk about it as from underneath, but you can have it be wherever it is that works for you. And then the second tool, I'm going to talk about tools 2 through 4 all together because I in this instance, I think we're not going to have time to really go into anyone in enough detail to make that worthwhile. So they're compassion, acceptance, and awareness. So that's 4, 3, 2. But we build that compassionate, accepting awareness of ourselves. We practice becoming more and more aware of ourselves, and we meet that awareness, whatever it is that we become aware of, with acceptance and compassion. Or compassionate acceptance. So it's like everything that we are building that practice of being able to come to each moment in that compassionate, accepting awareness building way. We're curious. We're open to the reality of what is, and we meet that reality with that open heart, that loving presence. The kind of the notable lack of judgment, perhaps. Mm. and then The fifth tool is forgiveness. And the way that we talk about forgiveness is it's something that naturally flows from the practice of the first four tools, that as we are practicing that compassionate, accepting awareness of ourselves, we will naturally forgive ourselves, forgive other people, because as we start to kind of own more of our own story, we're able to like pull back those resentments. And forgive ourselves oftentimes is really where the healing happens, is when we let ourselves off the hook for the things that we aren't actually responsible for, or all of the other ways that we kind of tie ourselves in knots. Mm, yeah. And sometimes it is forgiving other people. Yeah. And then the sixth tool is gratitude, and that's like recognizing the gifts in our experience. So oftentimes the things that are really painful in our lives are also really amazing teachers in our lives. And so it's becoming aware of the good that is also in the pain. And then the last tool is right action. And like I was saying before, that means like what we do, what we say in our lives, when what we do and what we say in our lives is aligned with our higher knowing, which is what we come to through the practice of that compassionate, accepting awareness grounded in faith, then we know what we need to do. We know when we need to tell our boss, like, hey, that really hurt my feelings when, you know, you did X, Y, or Z. Or we know that we need to say, like, this isn't a good job for me. I need to go do something else. Or we know, like, I need to speak my truth here. Or I need to not speak my truth here. I need to, whatever it is. Anyway, so it's how we know what we need to do or say in order to be making choices in our life that are aligned with our higher knowing.
Yes. So obviously we already talked about you need to become aware of how you're feeling, right? That's the second tool. Mm-hmm. And then you need to say, yes, that's my truth. In the moment that...
In this moment, I am feeling this, right? Like not, I am anxious. Or like, in this moment, I'm feeling anxiety. I am not my anxiety.
Yeah. Right? And so that's the acceptance piece. And then just being so kind to yourself, just being really...
I can love myself in having this anxiety.
Yeah. So what, to you as a therapist, what is anxiety? What?
Yeah. So anxiety is also... So I'm going to say that all things show up in our bodies, but anxiety is particularly loud in our bodies. People often will notice anxiety in their bodies before they're noticing it in their psyches.
That's really true.
And I think that anxiety has a lot of really notable physical symptoms. Kind of the most drastic is people end up in the ER thinking they're having heart attacks when they're experiencing panic a lot.
Yeah,
right?
Several.
Because the symptoms mimic. They get experienced the same way, right? So anxiety is, for a lot of people, that the physical reactions, it's the, you know, can be as mild as little butterflies in the stomach to, you know, full on can't breathe, chest hurts, you know, aren't extremities going numb, mind not able to focus, or mind being like hyper focused on something. But for a lot of people, it's also kind of this state that's kind of running in the background all the time, where you're just kind of constantly assessing for threats, and you're like on guard for threats all the time, and you're just like everything feels like a threat, and so you're like primed and ready for a threat. So it's almost like you think of it as like the elaboration of your stress response in a chronic fashion.
Yeah.
Or in an acute fashion, you know, like if you're really, you know, if you have a phobia and you're afraid of flying, right? That's an anxiety, but it might be just focused on the act of flying and not on everything, versus like a generalized anxiety disorder is just kind of that like constant general, you feel anxious about everything all the time. You never settle. You can't relax. You're always on edge. Yeah. Does that kind of answer your question? There's a number of diagnoses that are considered to be anxiety disorders in our diagnostic manual, but I think that a lot of people experience anxiety, and it's not necessarily at a level that would get clinically diagnosed, but I think that most people feel anxiety at least some of the time.
I think you're right about that. So how can we take these ideas that we just talked about and how to be healthy with our feelings and then apply them to anxiety.
Yeah. So I think that when we're healthier with our feelings, fewer things end up feeling like threats, because oftentimes we'll experience something as a threat when it's passed through a belief that's not grounded in our current reality. And so when we do the work of exploring our feelings and exploring our beliefs and changing the beliefs that are not aligned with our higher truth, then fewer things feel like threats. And it's that feeling of a threat that's going to be causing our anxiety. I also think that the practice of being healthy with your feelings, like we were talking about before, builds resilience. And so we're going to have more resources for resilience in those moments when we do feel anxious. Right? So we might feel anxious, but we're going to feel more capable of handling the anxiety. We're going to literally have more skills to come back from the anxiety. We're going to have the capacity to kind of hold that anxiety within the context of the rest of our lives, to not get as identified with it. And like all of the other things that then kind of create additional problems for us. Mm. Yeah, anxiety is really, it's really disruptive. It's really, I think for a lot of people, it kind of, I don't want to say habituated, because it kind of makes it sound like it's their fault somehow. But I think that so many of us constantly feel like we're under threat, that we're in some way or another, however real, that we're kind of constantly in this state of agitation, or, you know, our fight, flight, freeze responses is enacted. A lot of the time in the summit, we're talking about like eco anxiety and things that are kind of running in the background all the time, right? Like this threat to the environment is there all the time. And so we can kind of be aware of that enough that our system is activated, even though we're not like really consciously aware of it in the moment. So it can just kind of be like this place where we get stuck if we don't have the tools and for a lot of people, the support that we need to come back out of it. And so doing the things that build the resilience and building the skills to be out of the anxiety is really important.
Yeah, because as humans, we actually tend to get better at what we practice. And so if you practice having your sympathetic nervous system in overdrive and overstimulated all the time, you're going to get better at it. So, you know, so the anxiety is going to be there more and more.
Yeah. And, you know, with that, as you get better at practicing, looking at what's behind our feelings, that gives us more and more opportunities to create the lasting change in the places that are within ourselves creating the disquiet.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, so it's using the awareness and the mindfulness to see what's going on, and then being able to choose a different path for yourself in that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other really tricky thing about anxiety, because it is such a physical experience, that when we're feeling anxious about something that we are not consciously aware of, we'll often look for a story to explain the feeling, right? So we will physically be feeling anxious, but we're not consciously aware of the roots of that anxiety. And so we scan our life and find like, oh, I'm anxious because of this, or I'm anxious because of that. And then, you know, like maybe some of your childhood stuff is really activated, and so you're feeling really anxious, but you're not really aware of that. And so then you go like, oh, my job is so anxiety producing, and the traffic, and oh my God, la, 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 like all these other things that can explain it, but they're not really where the roots are. So if we're not doing that work of looking at the roots, then we're going to be like perpetually working at creating changes in places that aren't the problem.
Mm.
Or we will like be building more of that practice of being anxious at work, and anxious while we're driving, and anxious when we're this, and anxious when we're interacting with this person, and because we're kind of building those patterns of being anxious elsewhere.
Yeah.
It spreads.
So basically.
It permeates.
Yeah, it does. So to summarize, you know, feelings are these responses we get to whatever sensory information is coming in. There's going to be a feeling associated with that, right? So whatever we're seeing, if we look at a tree, that's going to generate a feeling. If so-and-so says something to us, that's going to generate a feeling. So we all have this constant river of feelings flowing in us. But it's sort of like after the experiences have been filtered through our belief systems, our, you know, the conclusions that we've drawn and temperament, all those different things. So that's what determines the feeling, right? And then what you said about being healthy with feelings, we need to be able to feel the feeling, just leave it be, just feel it. We don't need to think about it or analyze it, right?
Or change it,
yeah. And then we want
to... I mean, we want to think about it enough to explore it, but not to like rationalize it away.
Yeah. And then we want to get the information the feeling's bringing us, because we think about the feeling as the mailman or the UPS person or whatever, right? And then in order to get the feeling to deliver its message, what do we do? What, just to summarize, you mentioned how do you get the feeling to actually deliver the message it's bringing you about your life?
You can ask it questions like, you know, what do you want me to know? Or take me to your roots. Or, you know, when was the first time I felt this way? Or even really literally just, what is this feeling trying to tell me? Because when we ask ourselves those questions and we listen, the answers do usually emerge because we're just trying to get information from ourselves, right? So we already know. It's just a matter of getting that information into our conscious mind. So our conscious mind has to like invite our unconscious to share that information.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So it's like putting the request in with the archives, and the file will get sent up to your desk if you just put in the request.
It may take a few weeks, but yeah, it will get there, right?
May take a few weeks. Sometimes the files are a little, yeah, no, but it is. Sometimes we have a number of times.
Well, I know I've sat with feelings for that long, 3 weeks before I've been able to get an answer from them. So, but it does get easier with practice.
Yeah. When things are complicated and there's layers to things. And so sometimes, you know, we're working with the same part of our, the same feeling, the same belief for years, sometimes in the same way. And sometimes in, you know, that there's like, we do one layer of the work and then we have to circle back and do another layer of the work and then circle back and do another layer of the work as we get to know ourselves more and more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
So it's not a checkbox.
No.
Let go of your checkbox. You're not going to find boxes to check here. It is about being willing to be open and explore yourself and be curious and really practicing being kind to yourself, I think is the big thing. And I think one of the reasons why the compassion is so important is it creates the environment where the information can come out, right? Like when the information is threatened, when we're like really judgmental or defensive about things, it doesn't really feel safe for that file to come up to your desk. And so the archivist waits to bring it up until you're ready to receive it. And how you show that you're ready to receive it is by practicing the compassion and the kindness towards yourself.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, because I work with people a lot who say they don't ever hear the answers to their questions. And know that, and then say, okay, well, what we need to do is back up a little bit and start practicing just being really kind to yourself that you're not hearing these answers and that you're still suffering from this problem. And you found that as well, that helps them to eventually get the answer then.
It does. And I think also there is, like, sometimes the answers are coming and we're just expecting them to look different than they do. And
done
so, you know, being willing to accept that things might look or feel different than you're expecting them to. We had a student recently who was talking about, you know, asking and asking and asking and asking and asking, and like a memory never came up. And then she changed her question, and all of a sudden, she was able to recognize the information that maybe was there, maybe wasn't there. I don't know. I'm not inside of herself, nor am I the expert in her. But changing the question, being willing to hold it in a different way, made all the difference for this person.
That's a good recommendation too. So be willing to change up your questions if you're not getting good answers. And then, being healthy with your feelings is a really important, almost like foundational skill towards building resilience.
It is.
Yeah. And then So if you could leave our listeners, or first, is there anything else you wanted to summarize about what we've talked about today?
No, I think that's a lot of the important points.
Yeah. So if you could leave our listeners with three little tidbits of advice on how to be healthy with your feelings, and what would you say?
Yeah, I would say to find some sort of a practice for yourself that allows you to practice that compassionate, accepting awareness. And so maybe it's, you know, a reminder on the bathroom mirror so that you take that second while you're brushing your teeth to tune into yourself and see what you're feeling in that moment. Because I think, you know, we get busy during the day, and if we're not in the habit, we're not going to do it. And so building in that habit so that you're building the skill. Talk to patients and students a lot about like finding something that you do all the time where you're not doing something else, like going to the bathroom or brushing your teeth, where you can focus on that. Like just have that check in, like every time you go pee, just check in with yourself and see like, what am I feeling right now? And just practice that skill of checking in.
When you're waiting at a red light, that's a good time too.
When you're waiting at a red light, if you commute in such a way or live in such a place. Yeah. But really finding something where you do it all the time, and it can just become a part of your habit. So that in other moments when maybe life is feeling more difficult, you have that practice, you have that ability to check in because you know how to do it because you've been doing it in the easy moments.
Cool.
Or the easier moments. So that would be one. And I think really practicing being kind to yourself about whatever it is that you're uncovering. And this being healthy with your feelings thing, like it's not a checkbox. There's no end point to this. It's just a practice. And you are constantly evolving. And yeah, it's okay to be where you are. We are where we are because of the lives that we've led and the things that you know, we've experienced and the way that we've been within ourselves. And so in this moment, you don't need to be anywhere other than where you are. You can want to be somewhere else and you can do the things that take you there. But to be really kind to yourself about being where you are right now. Because I think when we feel judgmental about ourselves for being where we are, or we don't really admit to where we are, that inhibits us from being able to be somewhere else. And so, even if you don't like what you find when you look, really practice bringing that compassion. Yeah, I really just think like practicing the awareness and practicing the compassion, and being willing, I think, to ask yourself different questions or being willing to accept things as being different than you want them to be, just kind of broadening your perspective of what you're allowing to be okay for you in this exploration process.
Mm. And that's a really good point. So if people wanted to get more involved with you and your work, what resources do you have?
Yeah, well, if you are looking for therapy services and you live in Maryland or Washington State, you can find my therapy website at graceportertherapy.com. And if you're looking for more information about being healthy with your feelings, you can find the number 7tools.com, which you're probably familiar with now that you're listening to our summit. But we have a class coming out in the next little bit that's for parents called Strong Foundations, teaching your kids to be healthy with their feelings. And we really talk about what feelings are, how to be healthy with them, and how to help your kids learn how to be healthy with them as they grow. So that's going to be a really amazing resource for you and also for your kids. So check that out in the next little while. And then up till now, our big main class is called Taming the Bear. And we really take a deep dive into these ideas that we were talking about here. And it's I like to talk about it as a stress prevention and resilience building class, because we're really teaching you the skills to do this work that we were talking about today in a really supportive and encouraging and kind environment. So yeah, you can check us out there.
Yeah, I get thinking about, imagine if you can grow up, you know, start from birth and grow up, learning how to be healthy with your feelings each step of the way. Imagine what an inner resource that would be for you, and you can give that to your children. And but the interesting thing too is, the best way to teach your children how to be healthy with their feelings is for you to learn to be healthy with your feelings too. So in that Strong Foundations class, there's a lot of good help for the parents in there as well. Is that right?
Yeah.
So excellent. So I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. And and this, I think, is a most important topic. And I don't know if it's true in your practice, but in my practice, this being healthy with feelings is a really big issue for people that I would say it's a big deficit that they have, and then why they're having so many troubles and problems. And
I think it's either in needing to build the skills or needing to allow ourselves to feel the breadth of what we feel. I think a lot of times problems are emerging when we're not acknowledging a particular feeling.
Yeah, and so often we're our own harshest critic. And so learning that self-compassion is so transformational.
It is.
And that's a very important part of being healthy with your feelings.
It is.
Yeah. So thank you very much. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think we've covered a lot. It'd be a lot to digest.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.